Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Do you think this issue should be investigated to see if there was a hack and how it happened?
I'm a latecomer to the issue, but I'm sure I have confidence in Anthony Weiner that if an investigation is in order, that will take place.
Have you ever taken a picture like this of yourself?
I can tell you this, that I have photographs. I don't know what photographs are out there in the world of me. I don't know what things have been manipulated and doctored.
Go back to Katz's deli, Weiner. I mean, really, you never should have broken free of the deli business. This is unbelievable. Now, you say, how could a congressman be enmeshed in a thing like this for 3 days and be talking about it, number one? Number two, it's obvious it was a picture of himself, which he didn't send, but he did take it. Number three, why would you vote for a schmuck who would take a picture of himself in a pair of underwear to begin with? And number four, the answer is because liberalism is a mental disorder. And you say, well, if a Republican did it, they'd be gone by now. But that is true. So I racked my brain all night. People kept saying to me, how come he's a Democrat, this guy Weiner in New York? He gets caught with his pants down, literally. He hems and he haws and he has and he hees and he in and up, but it may not be me. It is me. I don't know. It could be my shorts. I don't know whose shorts they are. They look like my shorts. I remember Bloomingdale's had a special on a pair of shorts like this. Although the angle, I don't know. I took it. I didn't send it, but I did. It could be me. On and on for 3 days. This is a congressman now who would be mayor of New York, and he's not out of there. And the reason is simple. If it was a Republican, of course he'd be out of there. A, because Republicans have more self-respect. When they're caught, they quit. That's number one. But you see, the Democrats are actually going to like him more for this because drug, sex, rock and roll, Medicare, Medicaid, and the environment is their norm. In other words, they expect a Democrat to be involved in a thing like this, taking pictures of his private parts and sending him around. They say, well, how come it doesn't apply to Republican? Or you say it? Because Republicans allegedly hold themselves up to a higher standard of family values, whereas people who vote for liberal Democrats expect them to behave like this. In fact, if they don't behave like Anthony Weiner, they won't vote for them. They're liable to accuse them of being a crypto Republican. So if you think it's going to cause his career to collapse, you're wrong. His ratings probably went up in New York City, West Hollywood, and regions of Austin, Texas, amongst other sad sacks sites in the United States of America. Now, yesterday I was focused, Mike, and we focused on the banking collapse and who did it. Today I'm jaded, Mike. I'm exhausted from yesterday's show. But we're going to continue to look at 25 people to blame for the financial crisis, leading off with Time.com's list. Angelo Mozzillo, we should roll the drums. This is the Hall of Shame. 25 people to blame for the financial crisis. Angelo Mozzillo, the son of a butcher. He co-founded Countrywide in 1969. Phil Graham is on the list. Remember old Phil Graham? He played a leading role in pushing through Congress the 1999 repeal of the Depression-era Glass-Steagall Act, which separated commercial banks from Wall Street, okay? How about Alan Greenspan? Nice old Alan Greenspan. Remember old Federal Reserve Chairman Greenspan and his old lady who's on MSNBC, who I detest? Every time I see her, I want to break something on the television. There is something about Greenspan's old lady that gets me crazy on MSNBC. You talk about the government media complex. I'm reading from Time Magazine's 25 People to Blame for the Financial Crisis. Chris Cox, where'd he go? Really? He was the wolf guarding the chicken house. Hank Paulson. Joe Cassano. You don't know these guys. We don't know. Ian McCarthy. Frank Raines. Kathleen Corbett. Dick Fuld. Marion Herb Sandler. We'll have more to say about those wonderful specimens of good humanity in a few moments. Marion and Herb Sandler, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, Stanley O'Neill, Wen Jiabao, David LaRaya, John Devaney, Bernie Madoff, Lou Ranieri, Burton Jablin, Fred Goodwin, Sandy Weill. Remember old Sandy Weill who put his sister-in-law into a congressional seat here in Northern California? Old Sandy Weill, David Odson, Jimmy Kaine. Now, those are the people named for being blamed for the financial crisis by Time.com. And a wonderful article that they did was little appreciated at the time, by the way. I am going to focus on the Sandlers for one reason. A, because they live in the San Francisco area, and B, they're the most invisible of the bunch. The Sandlers not only made billions of dollars, but they are pouring it into the most leftist anti-American groups imaginable. And so we begin tonight on the Savage Nation with a wonderful promotional film about the Sandlers done by none other than a university who they gave millions to. See what you get for your money? If you give money to the University of California at San Francisco, you think it all goes for medical research, right? You're wrong. Some of it goes for a video that makes you look like a saint. So let us begin with the 2010 University of California San Francisco Medal recipients, Herbert Herb Sandler, J.D., and Marion O. Sandler, MBA, in clip 01.
Herb Sandler entered law school at age 19. Marion Osher was one of Wall Street's first women analysts, an expert on savings and loans. Together, they thought they could run an SNL, but it took a big nudge from...
My brother Barney.
They did it. With Barney's help, bought a California SNL and built Golden West Financial into one of America's largest financial institutions. Along the way, Herb's brother died. To honor him, Herb and Marion singled out the New York-based Human Rights Watch. Executive Director Ken Roth was about to meet donors of a different kind.
When they believe in an idea, they're willing to go to the mat. They're willing to invest beyond what anyone else would. Do it with their generosity, with their contacts, with
their business. Shut your mouth, you psychotic red diaper doper baby. If I could reach through the mic, Rights Watch is preventing us from defending ourselves against the onslaught by radical Islam. And yet, the Sandlers are funding Human Rights Watch amongst other crazy organizations. Shall we continue this, or you want me to go on to something funny like Anthony Weiner's crotch? Because, I mean, we can go mainstream. Yesterday I was focused, Mike. Today I am jaded, Mike. Would you like me to continue on the Sandlers? I need an audience response. Would you like to hear more about Marion and Herbert Herb Sandler, the Saints from San Francisco? I mean, we'd play the Saints go marching in, but we don't happen to have it in the archives right now because they're such wonderful people. They are such good people that we should continue to play their PR piece done by the University of California San Francisco puff piece after they gave them a ton of money. Who else would you say is responsible for the SNL scandal was chicken feed compared to what these people pulled off. The SNL scandal also resulted in long jail time. But thus far, no one who did it is in jail. Nobody. We could also talk about Mitt Romney. He gave a good speech today. I listened to him. And frankly, I heard tones of Ronald Reagan. And although I know Mitt Romney is a moderate centrist Republican, I believe he's going to win. Point blank, I think Mitt's the one, frankly. And you know, I know he's meek and weak on many things that I believe in, but you're never going to get a real conservative in the White House in your time. And Romney is as close as we're ever going to get to a real American. There's no question he's going to run, and there's no question he's going to probably win. If I had a bet right now, I'd give him a 60-40, a 6-4 shot of winning. Not only because he's a better candidate, but because he's a real American. We know where he was born. Not only do we know where he was born, but we also know his father was an upstanding American citizen as opposed to Obama's parents, who were not really in love with America, number one. And number two, yes, it matters. It all goes to character because it affects the child. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Saints go marching in. The San Francisco area is filled with liberal saints. They give millions and millions of dollars, and movies are made about them with their own money, and they get awards and medals. And the top of the Saint heap belongs to Herb. That's Herbert Herb Sandler, J.D., and Marion O. Sandler, MBA, who built a great financial empire and unloaded it with what some would describe toxic assets to Wachovia Bank just before the collapse. And for the $25 billion sale, allegedly they made $2.5 or $2.2 billion. And they're such saints that they give money away to groups such as Human Rights Watch, which attacks America and Israel as often as possible. They gave money to the fetid Center for American Progress, run by one of the worst Americans in history, John Podesta, who I believe is deeply involved in smearing me. They also have given millions of dollars to the ACLU, about $9 million, I think, to continue the assault on the Christian Republic that they hate so much. They give money to ProPublica, which is again filled with radical left-wing red diaper dopa baby so-called journalists who smear anybody who gets in their way. So that's why I say they are true saints. Let us now continue with the self-serving movie that was made by the University of California after they received millions of dollars from the saintly Sandlers. Let's pick up on clip two.
The Sandlers gave Human Rights Watch $30 million and priceless management insights.
Herb oh, yeah.
And Marion got something, too.
Once mm-hmm. you start, you get hooked. You get a satisfaction that you don't get anywhere else.
Sure. Ruining and smearing people, it's a wonderful feeling.
A foundation and a formula. Pick a few causes, give enough to make a big impact, and help the organization run well.
We know how to
evaluate the quality of the people, the quality of the organization, its capacity and potential to be successful.
Oh, yeah. Human Rights Watch, Herb. You should be proud of yourself. They do everything they can to make sure Israel doesn't exist. And anything they can do to undermine the United States of America, you sure know how to pick them. Why is it that a guy like Herb Sandler, who started with very little, made a fortune in this great country, spends his money, as does his wife, on groups such as Human Rights Watch, ProPublica, American Progress, and the ACLU, which, as you well know, are all anti and un-American? How is it possible that this happens? Now, should I stop talking about the Sandlers, or would you like me to talk about Anthony Weiner's underwear? And apparently there's no relationship between Anthony Weiner and the Sandlers, by the way. Sean in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. I want you to keep talking about the Sandlers and don't talk about Weiner's crotch, because it's the most important issue that Americans aren't learning. It's the banking system that you've been talking about since 2008, and I got to thank you for enlightening us.
Well, they're on the list of 25 people to blame for the financial crisis. They're not alone, of course. There are other sterling Americans that are on the list, as we have mentioned. Angelo Mozillo, Phil Graham, Alan Greenspan, who hides behind his nice guy smile with his old lady on MSNBC, spewing hatred and lies every day. Chris Cox, who was Bush's ex-SEC chief. How come he turned a blind eye to repeated allegations of fraud in the Madoff scandal? How did he do this? It's unbelievable to me. Hank Paulson himself, Treasury Secretary. Dick Fuld. So Marion and Herb Sandler, who was so brilliant that they took their brother-in-law's money. They mentioned there, don't they acknowledge their wonderful brother-in-law, another great liberal giver, Bernard Osher, another man at the pyramid of liberalism here in the Bay Area. One of the finest liberals the world has ever seen is none other than Herb Osher. A lot of Osher things here in the Bay Area. Apparently, he funded them with their first bank. It just shows you how good he was as a brother. He gave them the seed money to start the bank, which is amazing. What a wonderful family. Makes you wonder where it comes from, if it's in a genetic or whatever it is, how they can be such good people and love the country so much. The Sandler's World Savings Bank became the first to sell a tricky home loan called the Option ARM. And they pushed the mortgage, which offered several ways to backload your loan and thereby reduce your early payments, with increasing zeal and misleading advertisements over the next two decades. I'm quoting Time magazine. The couple pocketed $2.3 billion when they sold their bank to Wachovia in 2006. But losses on World Savings' loan portfolio led to the implosion of Wachovia, which was sold under duress late last year to Wells Fargo. Now, if you or your son were to rob a gold chain from Macy's, you'd probably go to jail for 3 to 5. If, on the other hand, you actually robbed Macy's in a hostile takeover, you'd go directly to the White House. You see how the country works? It's a brilliant. You have to understand how it works. The jails are filled with stupid people who robbed small things and got caught, while those who actually put them in jail robbed the nation itself and then give themselves a medals. It's amazing. I mean, the country. You have to understand what a brilliant system it really is. Debbie in Sacramento, welcome to the Savage Nation.
I really appreciate you enlightening us, because by doing so, you empower us to know who's doing what and why, you know, a better understanding why they're doing this.
Well, when you hear a group like Human Rights Watch, it sounds good. But Human Rights Watch, as you well know, has a vendetta against American people, the American people, particularly the American military. They also hate Israel with an almost pathological passion. So we have to say, well, how do they get their money? Who gives it to them? If Human Rights Watch is preventing us from defending ourselves against the onslaught of radical Islam, which many analysts who are very sane see them doing at every turn, you have to say, who gives them the money? You would think it would come from Saudi Arabia. No, it comes from the Sandlers. How is that possible? Now we get on, and now you understand how John Podesta, one of the most vile individuals in America, who I think has targeted me, John Podesta and the Center for American Progress was created by Hillary Clinton, and I believe they are the ones who were deeply involved in taking my sound bites out of context and sending them to England, and therefore putting me on a list with murderers and terrorists to show you what good liberals can be and how honest and honorable they are. Now let's listen to clip number three.
Giving became their calling. They helped found and fund the Center for American Progress, a progressive think tank, and ProPublica to do independent investigative journalism.
Now, ProPublica, which does independent journalistic investigation, is a left-wing smear organization filled with the University of Dropoutville. Anyone who could not get into a journalism school, or let's put it to you this way, anyone who lost their job in journalism, or anyone who had any integrity, would never work for an organization like that. They're a left-wing smear organization that would have functioned very well under Joseph Stalin, in my opinion.
Savage.
This is called A Great Merger, Herb and Marion Sandler. Today, a force for high-impact philanthropy, using what made them successful in business, due diligence and disciplined management. Now, due diligence doesn't mean dawdling. Take their first joint venture.
We met in August. We were engaged in November.
How cute.
And married in March.
Isn't that sweet?
So it happened very rapidly.
Isn't that sweet?
I thought it was awfully long.
Herb Sandler entered law school at age 19, got his love of the underdog from his dad and brother.
Marion
Ocean was one of Wall Street's first women analysts, an expert
triangle
on savings
shirtwaist
and loans.
Fire.
Together, they thought they could run an SNL, but it took a big nudge from...
My brother Barney, who said, "I'm tired of hearing about this. Either do it or stop talking about it."
See what good people they are. They got a nudge from Barney Osher, another paragon of liberalism in the Bay Area, revered by people such as Nancy Pelosi and others, as you well know, who love America so much. Hello, Abe. This is Herb. I want that Savage off the air right now or all grants get cut. You got it, Abe? Let's all go to the cleaners. Romney slams Obama. He's failed USA. Superbug spreads in Europe. Yeah, the superbug bothers me a great deal, truthfully. I got two children, grown children. Both are going to Europe separately. And I said don't eat vegetables. So what's there to eat in Europe if you can't eat the vegetables? You can't eat the shellfish. It comes from Asia, and it's contaminated. All you want to do is eat meat, and they don't want to eat meat, so there's nothing to eat in Europe. So I say, why go to Europe? Stay in the Bay Area or Los Angeles and eat the food that's edible. Why? What are you going to Europe for? But they're going anyway. Who listens to their father anyway? Whoever listened to a father? Oh, yes. Schmuckabee says he could change his mind. Wow, I can't wait for him to run. That's what the world's been waiting for is Schmuckabee. Palin. Okay, let's not start him with Palin. And Trump. What a ticket that would be. I mean, if you ever wanted a nightmare ticket, it would be Palin-Trump. That's an assured victory for the Communist Front in the United States of America under Obama. How about an Obama-Wiener ticket? I mean, that might be a winner right now, because Wiener represents an even more despicable wing of the Democrat Party than Obama does. You know, one thing you got to say positive about Obama, he may be a fanatic leftist and Marxist, which is pretty clear, but at least he's, on the moral level, you know, he's a married guy with children. I mean, give the guy credit for that, unlike one of his role models, Bill Clinton. You know, you don't see any scandals around him. He's kept his nose clean in that regard, and that's that. So I think that he needs somebody to balance out his ticket a little bit more. He needs someone like Wiener. I think an Obama-Wiener ticket would be just the trick to aggravate and stimulate the base, because the leftist base is not excited by Obama. He's not radical enough for them, you see. But if they brought in the Wiener from New York, you could have an Obama-Wiener ticket. You'd get the base excited. Pardon the bad plunge. Pardon the bad plum. But no, that would excite the base, would be an Obama-Wiener ticket. Because then all the pornographers could pour money into the White House run. You understand? All right, forget about it. What do you want to talk about? Oh, did you hear what happened in Greece? Greece was bailed out. They're back again to the begging table for another bailout. Nobody knows what to do. Moody's downgrade puts Greece in debt, rating hall of shame alongside Cuba. Can you believe this? Do you know Greece was bailed out? Now, Greece risks becoming the euro area's first sovereign default. I hope the Sandler's handlers are listening, because this may be an opportunity for you to buy Greece. You can probably buy Greece for a penny on the whatever the currency is there. They could wind up owning the entire nation of Greece and put all the Greeks to work. Greece risks becoming the euro area's first sovereign default, causing a chain reaction that could rock the financial system of the world's second biggest economic bloc. Attention, George Soros. Attention, the Sandlers. This is the time to buy Greece and Ireland in a package deal. It's a bargain. What if they bought a nation? Could you buy an entire nation? It's true that it is true, by the way, that Lord Rothschild bought France, in essence, by funding one of Napoleon's wars. He wound up owning the country of France. Remember what Rothschild said? He said, "Don't give me the leadership of a nation. Just give me control of the currency and I'll control the nation." Does that sound familiar to you? All you would-be money traders of the world? Greece's crisis could torpedo Europe's recovery. Did you know about this? A year after rescuing Greece from default, Europe is staring into the abyss. The bailout has proved insufficient. Of course it's insufficient. Greece needs more money and it can't borrow from private markets, where it faces interest rates as high as 25%. Would you lend Greece money? The country produces next to nothing. The people are lazy. And they're all socialists who want the government to bail them out. How long can this go on? Now, you say, well, how can you fix this? You can't fix it. What has to happen is a depression is actually healthy. Do you understand this? You know, it's like a patient tries to stave off an illness when, in fact, I'll put it in a medical context in another way. As you well know, Western medicine is wonderful and brilliant in some areas, but myopic in others. For example, if you get a fever, if the fever is not catastrophic, it is often very wise to permit the fever to run its course, because a high fever will burn out the underlying infection in most cases. A high fever will, and what do you think the body goes into a state of fever for? It's a reaction, of course, to an invader, and by running a high fever, the body is trying to kill off the invader by raising the body temperature. And so in that situation, the bacteria will often be killed by the high fever. Now, enter Western medical methodologies. They will put you on drugs to lower your fever. In lowering your fever, you're actually keeping the disease germ, the underlying cause, alive. So it's the same thing with a financial fever. Greece needs to bottom out. Greece needs to bust out. Greece needs to go back to being what it is, a third world nation, and pull itself up by its bootstraps. And it's the same with every other nation that produces nothing. That's another way to look at it. But that's not the way things are looked at, whether it be in medicine or in economics. You understand how this works, don't you? Again, like on dead ears. You better give me some music. I don't know. People are interested in anything anymore. Is anyone listening to this show? I mean, allegedly, this is the third largest radio show in America. It's at over 310 stations. My website, michaelsavage.com, has over 4.1 million uniques a month. I mean, come on. Someone's listening to the show somewhere. Is anyone listening to this show? They're not interested in the Sandlers. They're not interested in Greece. They're not interested in cucumbers from Europe. They're not interested in, what are you interested in? Cars? I could talk about cars. I'm a very diverse man. Let us see what else is in the news. Greece. That's a dead topic, Greece, because there's no emotions involved. There's no Q factor in Greece because you don't know any Greeks anymore. You don't know anyone who's like named Aristotle, and no one even names their children for Aristotle anymore. When I was a kid, there were Greek people we knew in Jamaica High School's name were Aristotle because he was still known. Today, they don't even know who Aristotle is in Greece. They never heard of him. It's not a common name in Greece anymore. The name John is not common in England anymore. The most common name for newborn in England is Muhammad. You know that, don't you, in Londonistan? Because they're so busy getting drunk and fornicating, they can't defend themselves. Greece's crisis could torpedo Europe's recovery. What recovery? There is no recovery. You can't recover from an illness like this. You got Greece, Ireland, Spain, and Portugal, basket cases. They were all living on borrowed money. In essence, they were living very much like what we're living on, refinancing. Everyone was refinancing based upon the idea that tomorrow the infrastructure would be worth more and they could then refinance. So the bubble burst. Now what happens? You go back to living more sanely. Let's say you're an average Greek teacher, so you don't take a vacation to Mallorca. Okay, you can't go to Mallorca. You can't go to London on a spending spree. You got to stay in Greece, and you got to eat olives and feta cheese. And you don't kill the goat, in other words. Okay, you stay in Greece. You look like Zorba the Greek. You get gnarly. You get stronger. You live longer instead of looking pasty and weak like a Frenchman. The country will be tougher for it, but it's the only way that they're going to save themselves. The same with Spain. I lived in Spain in the mid-60s, and it was what an interesting country it was. The construction workers were hard as iron. They were all Spanish. They started at 4:30 in the morning. They built a fire out of wood left over from the construction site to warm up. You know, this is a different nation now. I don't think there are Spaniards who even build anything anymore. Now they all want to be like the French. So it depends about what you want to be like. That's all. Now, I don't want to talk about banks anymore. I got your attention. How about a Mitt Romney speech, since I'm groping? Let us hear clip 32. Let's see if that attracts the attention of those who are interested only in Wiener's boxer shorts.
These failing hopes make up President Obama's own misery index. It's never been higher. And what's his answer? He says this, "I'm just getting started." No, Mr. President, you've had your chance. We, the people on this farm and citizens across the country, are the ones who are just getting started.
Now, I heard the speech. It was very good. This sound isn't particularly good. And there's a vile individual on MSNBC who is probably the lowest of the newscasting tribe, probably the most psychotic. My guess is the most highly medicated. He foams at the mouth when he talks about white people, even though he's white. I call him Mr. Softball because the man is disgusting. After Romney's speech, he went foaming on the air about, "Oh, look at that. It's all white people in New Hampshire. Look at that. It's all whites. Yeah, he doesn't represent America. Look at that. It's all white people." Said. Now, this is from a white Irishman who went to Catholic school, who sits up there and pretends that he is a person of color in order to identify with people of color. Do you think people of color are going to identify with Mr. Softball because he tells them that he's on their side? I don't understand this guy's mentality. I just don't understand it. I can't understand how NBC funds these people. Next case. Didn't that also went over like another lead balloon here? All right. I could see no reaction. I have an instinct for the business. It's how I've survived all these years, and I'll have one best-selling book after another. Romney, you're not interested in. The financial crisis, you're not interested in. Wienergate, you're not interested in. A tornado, maybe, in Massachusetts. Is that any interest to you? That's a television story. Where's Al Gore now that a tornado hit Massachusetts? You would think the shyster of all shysters, the shyster of the century, Al Gore, would have been out saying it was global warming. Where is he? I mean, and that man normally doesn't miss a trick. We learned last week when he gave a commencement speech that he got a D in natural sciences, which shows you what he knows about science. He could buy scientists the same way the Sandlers buy scientists to say anything he wants. He could buy a scientist the way you can buy a hooker in Budapest for a very low price. You could probably trade cottage cheese for a hooker in Budapest the same way you could buy a scientist at the University of California for a proper grant. In my opinion, though, that's only one man's opinion. Nick in New York. Okay, I got an angry Greek. Nick in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Dr. Savage, I wouldn't say that all Greeks are lazy. I just don't think there are any jobs in Greece for these educated people to actually have work. So I wouldn't say the Greek people are lazy. I think that's a little unfair.
All right, that's fair enough. Now, you know, I've extolled the virtues of Aristotle and Plato and the Greek philosophers for ages on this show. You're aware of that or not?
Very much so.
All right. But there's a big gap of time between Aristotle and today. You know, what does Greece export other than a Kalamata olives?
Peaches.
Peaches, Greek peaches. Are they in the same category as the E. coli cukes from Spain?
I don't know, Dr. Savage.
I don't know. It's a terrible thing. Where does E. coli come from, this mutated E. coli in Europe? So Greece exports peaches.
We export peaches, olives, and great beaches and a good time. That's basically what we have.
How about feta cheese? Do you still export feta cheese?
I think we still export feta cheese too, Dr. Savage.
But you see, the Greeks have to get their act together and come up with something the world needs. Because peaches and olives and feta cheese are wonderful, but they're not going to save the nation. There has to be some kind of manufacturing along the lines of what China's doing. Why can't Greece revolutionize its thinking? And I think it goes back to the culture of Greece, which is Mediterranean and kind of lazy.
The government is completely corrupt in Greece, Dr. Savage.
Ah, okay. I'm glad you said it. Socialist, is it not?
By the age of 40, you could have retired and got 1,000 euros for the rest of your life.
Well, there you go. They all want to travel to this to Mallorca and have a vacation at 40. Or they want to come to New York on a vacation, on an eight-week vacation paid for by the government. They can't live that way. No one can support it anymore. I see all of the Euro trash here in San Francisco in the summer. All the commies, the teachers, and the other government Euro trash walking around the streets on government pensions. They sit in the cafes and they walk around sneering at America. But meanwhile, they come here. We used to call them Euro trash. I guess you can't say it anymore with the age of the New World Order. I suppose I might be banned in Greece for that. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Well, look, we have a problem here in America, let alone Greece and Spain and Ireland. The fact of the matter is the American dream has come to an end for too many people. The only jobs that Obama has created in America come with name tags, hairnets, and funny hats rather than high wages, great benefits, and long-term security. So, I mean, if you want a job with a name tag, a hairnet, or a funny hat, you're doing well under Obama. There's no question about it. Nearly one in five men, and I say men, not people, because the women are doing better than the men, thanks to the social engineers. Nearly one in five men between 25 and 54 is without a job right now. One in five between 25 and 54 across all racial lines, across education lines. You have a monster problem in this country. Sure, they could get a job under Obama if they want to put on a name tag, a hairnet, and a funny hat. They could go to work in the new America, because the jobs went along with the factories. The jobs went along with the businesses that were sold out from under them. The jobs went with the high regulation and the high taxation of the Obama communist Marxist front. New York City, Joe, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, hello, Dr. Savage. Of course, you're right about the uptick reel and the Glass-Steagall. But as far as the banks paying back the top money. If they did and pay back part of all of it, here's how they did it. Do you remember when the hello?
Yeah,
hello?
They paid it back by borrowing more money from the government.
Exactly, they borrowed the money from the Federal Reserve Bank at zero.
That's right. It's a scam. They say that the banks who were given TARP money under Nancy Pelosi's regime paid it all back in that movie Too Big to Fail. But we know the money A was paid back with other government money, and B they paid no interest. It's a scam again.
Which propped up treasuries falsely.
Well, when does this come to an end? When you have a lunatic like Bernanke, who artificially keeps interest rates at near 0% because he's an academician who's obsessed with the first depression of the 1929 era. The man is obsessed with his academic view of things. The man is actually causing a continuance of the financial crisis. He's not solving it. Bernanke has to go. Geithner has to go. We need new thinking in the White House, but you're not going to get it because they put Obama in power. Whoever controls Bernanke and Geithner, and don't make any mistake about it, they're not controlling this game. Whoever controls them put Obama in the White House. Am I right about that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. But it's not going to come to an end because the money, when the Federal Reserve borrowed, lent them the money, they created out of thin air. They don't even bother printing it anymore. It's digitized now. And that's
I see. So they don't even need a printing press. That way you save on paper.
Yeah, it's just digitized right now, and that's what's causing the inflation that we're going to be dealing with. And that's what.
Now, do you have a job with a name tag, a hairnet, and a funny hat, or are you retired?
No, I'm actually out of work right now because banks didn't lend my.
It's no joke. I mean, it's really no joke. It can make a person crazy. It can make you nuts. I mean, you heard of the Arab Spring. We're liable to have an American Spring very soon. When you have this many people out of work, there could be riots. If there were a Republican in office with the Sandler's money and with George Soros's infected money in the system, with the virus of this kind of ill-gotten gain floating around in the American left, if there was a Republican president, there would be riots in the streets. You notice that there have been no riots, no trash can set on fire in Zurich or at the G8 meeting. You notice there's been no riots in America against the bankers, no trash cans on fire, no police being pelted with rocks, no police horses being hit with stones. Why? Ask yourself why. Because there is a communist in the highest office, and the people who put him in power fund all of the street thugs who have been told to stay home. Do you understand how this works? Do you get the picture? Do you understand the bigger picture? I hope you do. It doesn't take a hairnet to understand this.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It's me already. I got to go on the air without a buildup and a soundbite. Welcome to the Savage Nation. If you just tuned in, you're listening to the most powerful name in talk radio, Michael Savage. And we were talking about a number of things, none of which seem to have attracted much attention. We talked about who's responsible for the meltdown of the American economy, and Time Magazine listed the 25 people most involved. And one of them was Herb and Marion Sandler, two esteemed individuals in the liberal pantheon here in the Bay Area. They give away tens of millions, hundreds of millions, but not to groups that you would approve of. They give it to groups like Human Rights Watch, as you well know, an American hating group, an Israel hating group, a military hating group. They give it to fetid groups such as the Center for American Progress, which is a Stalinist organization, in my estimation. They fund failed journalists in ProPublica to go and write hate and hit pieces on anyone who's not a liberal. And so that's what Herb and Marion Sandler did with their superb profits from the sale of their World Savings Bank. And we played that soundbite, but you weren't interested in that. We talked about Wienergate. And you know that Wiener is married to, that's Congressman Anthony Wiener to you from New York, who's the biggest loudmouth on the left imaginable. I mean, he's a bigger loudmouth than almost anyone on the left. And so let's say it is him for a minute, because he doesn't say it isn't. Just for a second. It is him in the underwear. Why would you vote for a man who takes a picture of himself like that? Never mind, he didn't send it, so he didn't send it. But he didn't say he didn't take it. What man, who would vote for a congressman who takes a picture of his crotch and sends it to anybody? Would you ever do a thing like that? Doesn't it show you if it is true? Let's say it's true. Let's take that side. That it is true, that he is a congressman. He is a screaming liberal and uses the poor for his own advantage. In the middle of Wienergate, he was screaming, I want to get back to what's important for America, which is the disparity between the rich and the poor, like he's one of the poor again. Another one was suddenly he's poor. He made himself poor overnight. Suddenly he personally benefited. He was personally affected by the Triangle Shirtwaist fire, and it singed his hair. So are poor people that stupid? Is that why they're poor? I wonder that they could let a guy like that pretend he cares about them. You'd be better off with a conservative who tells you up front he doesn't care about you. At least you know where the guy's coming from. If I were very poor, I would have more faith in a conservative who was straight up with what he was going to do to turn the economy around than some false white liberal who says to me, I'm on your side and I'm going to give you something. Look what you got from Obama. The only jobs Obama created are jobs that come with hairnets, name tags, and funny hats. That's what you got from Obama. And he flies around the world drinking Guinness. You know, here's the thing about Wiener that I think is very, very strange. He's of the Jewish faith, and he's married to a woman of Muslim of the Muslim faith, mother from India, father from Pakistan, or vice versa. But she's a practicing Muslim. How could she stay with a guy who's even accused of this? I mean, if you're an Orthodox Muslim, would you stay with a man who took a picture of his underwear and sent it to anybody, assuming he did it? Or would you stay with a man who even talked about it for 3 days? If that happened to me, God forbid, and it could never happen to me because I'm not one of those people. I grew up in another generation. You don't take pictures of your underwear and send it to anybody. I don't even talk on a telephone to people, what I believe. I keep it to myself. I grew up watching too many mafia movies. And I know the government listens in on everything everybody says anyway. So I don't even talk on the telephone. I talk enough on the microphone to get myself into hot water sufficient to not even... So, I mean, I go to pay phones, which don't exist anymore in my mind. I use imaginary pay phones to have a conversation. But let's say you're married to a man who did this. Would you stay with him? Stand by your man? How could you stand by your man after a thing like this? I don't get it. So let's say it is true. But let's say it's not true that Wiener did not take the picture of himself in the underwear. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt. Then why did he talk about it for 3 days? Let's say you're enmeshed in a thing like that, and the reporters came hammering you. Was it you? Wasn't you? Is it you? Did you do it? Did you do it? Now, the reason they're doing it is to distract from something bigger. You don't think that they're after him, okay? You see, you don't understand something. Wiener was thrown to the wolves by somebody higher up in the Democrat food chain who wants him out of the way. That's my estimation. These things don't happen by accident. Now, why do I say a thing like that? I have no inside information as to who in the Democrat Party wanted him out of the way. It's got to be someone who he was competing with to run for a higher office. Someone on the Senate level, all right? I think you can put two and two together. Put some hair in the picture, and you'll get the answer. That's A. Let's go to Spitzer, okay? Remember Spitzer, Elliot Spitzer, the jerk on CNN? Okay, like clueless. Like you could see by his eyes he was never bright. You could see by the eyes that if he didn't have a father with money, he'd be running maybe, let's see, in my day, a guy like Spitzer, if the father, a different economy. But a guy like Spitzer, if the father didn't have money in my day, maybe a sandwich shop in Boca Raton, top. Maybe with a little help from an aunt who gave him a little money to start. Now, there's nothing, the country needs sandwich shops. All right, so his father had money, made it in real estate, and made the boy, so he becomes attorney, was he attorney general at the point? What was he? What was Elliot Spitzer? He was governor, no less. Governor Corleone, Senator Corleone. So he was governor of New York State, and all of a sudden he gets enmeshed in a scandal of the hooker thing, Spitzer, right? Now, how did he get caught? He goes to hookers and he pays by credit card. I must tell you, I never read of anybody who was not mentally deficient who paid for a hooker by credit card. Generally, people hide those things and pay by cash. This schmuck paid by credit card, not only that, to a bank somewhere in the Cayman Islands, if I remember correctly. Now, why was he outed with the hookers? Here's the whole point about Spitzer. In my estimation, who was it who was most vehemently after the gangs on Wall Street? Elliot Spitzer. If you remember before the fall, he was vehemently going after the gangs of Wall Street. They knew it. They found his weakness, as you would see in any gangland movie. You find the weakness and go for it. They found that he had a weakness for the ladies of the night. Then they found out the schmuck paid by credit cards. They said, we'll get him with that. Boom. No longer were they going. I said, and right after that, you had the scandal, the Wall Street scandals, because they robbed us blind. He was actually a good guy, strangely enough. He was stupid enough to go after the people who put him in power. He was stupid enough to go after the people who run the country. He was stupid enough to take on Wall Street when they are actually the country. They're the government. And they got him at his weakest point, which was the hooker thing. So now let's bring it to Wienergate. What committee does Wiener sit on in the Congress? You have to look at that. Don't look at the underwear. Look beyond the underwear. Excuse me, I don't mean look beyond the underwear physically. I mean look beyond the underwear in terms of politics. Does anyone know what committee? Babe, we'll do a quick search on what committees Congressman Anthony Wiener sits on. And then we'll find out who might have thrown him to the wolves here. Because this, again, has to be seen in the context of the Spitzer model. I'm a trained scientist by training. So I have a logical mind to begin with. I mean, it's many 25 years of training. And, I'm not a young man, actually. I'm very young inside. I'm a young man inside. But I have been using my mind in an Aristotelian manner for well over six decades. Well, I wouldn't say I started that. I would say over five decades I've been able to use the Aristotelian method of logic and scientific method in a fundamental way. Once I learned what it was, it became the most powerful tool I ever learned in life. The most powerful tool that I ever learned in life was the Aristotelian method. That's to be nice to the Greeks, because people think I smeared the Greek people in the last hour talking about that them being lazy. So he's a subcommittee on health, subcommittee on oversight and investigations. Bingo. If there's a journalist who is not owned lock, stock, and barrel by either Soros money or Sandler money, that's if there's any left in the country. A few work for Andrew Breitbart. They're the only journalists left in the country. If there are any journalists left in the country, what I would suggest to you is make a name for yourself by looking into the Wiener committees. Here, he's on Committee on Energy and Commerce, Subcommittee on Health, Subcommittee on Oversight and Investigation, and see who Wiener had in his crosshairs. Now you backtrack. That's the Aristotelian method. And don't say I didn't tell you. 1-800-449-8255 or michaelsavager.com. Let's go to Sheila in New York on WOR. Sheila, welcome to the program.
Dr. Savage, why doesn't anybody see that it's Wiener's wife who sent it? That's why he can't say who did it. That's why he's backing away from it. He's walking.
Wait. You mean the wife did it in order to embarrass him?
I don't think she likes him very much.
But she just married him in July. She married him a month ago. Wait, what month? She married him like 9 months ago.
There you go, bingo. But I think that she would have sent it in, and he can't say who did it.
Normally, after 9 months, the wife sends a picture of something that's expanded on her body, right? All right, that was well put for a family show. The little ones. They don't glorify babies in our society anymore. Instead, they go to a disco and they throw it in a toilet if they don't like it. It interferes with the dance. And you wonder why the society is dying. U.S. slapped with credit warning. Credit rating agency Moody's. I don't even like the name Moody. It's like Moody's warns U.S. government's credit rating is at risk of a downgrade if there's no progress on reaching a deal to increase the nation's borrowing limit. Oh, I see. Increase the nation's borrowing limit. Okay, I get it. Right. It was Moody's, by the way, who was intimately involved in some of the ratings that led to the Wall Street debacle. Gunman, five others dead in series of shootings. Cops say 73-year-old suspect in shootings in Yuma, Arizona. 73 shot five and injured one before killing himself. Here's a salacious story now. Cross-dressers to bypass workplace dress codes. California bill could allow for cross-dressers to wear whatever they want to work despite dress codes. You see, in Animal Farm, some animals are more equal than others. And the more despicable the animal, the more twisted the animal, the more equal it is. I'll be right back.
Savage.
If I were a rich man, yeah. All day long I'd biddy biddy bum. If I were a wealthy man,
oui.
I wouldn't have to work hard.
Mm-hmm. I give the pro
if I were a biddy biddy rich, Yidle, diddle, diddle, diddle,
hoy! All right, welcome. If I were a rich man, yeah. All right, turn it off already. Play some Greek music. Play some Zorba Bouzouki music for me on the Savage Nation. Because I'm too big to fail. That's funny. Nobody's too big to fail, let me tell you that. See, this is Greece. This is when Greece had an export product. Melina Mercury. Kazantzakis. What happened to Greece? They got too fat and lazy. They copied the French. They exported literature, art. What happened to Greece? Nothing comes out of Greece anymore. An olive? A Kalamata olive? We have them in California. See how slow it is already? You've gone to sleep. You don't even want to hear it. It's a different cadence from our time. Techno music. You're used to speedy, fast, like Alka-Seltzer music. All right, turn it off. You don't understand what I'm talking about. Whoever knows who wrote Zorba the Greek will win nothing from me. I'm glad you read it when you were young, because what a great book that was. Does anyone even remember the book? You remember Anthony Quinn playing Zorba? What an incredible movie. I don't know if Ilya Kazan directed that one. He directed one of the great movies that was based upon the Greek experience, which was America, America, which I've recommended on the show over the years. I mean, if you want to rent a DVD tonight with you and the children or over the weekend, I could recommend nothing better than America, America, about the saga. It's about the saga of a Greek boy who is suffering the oppression of that all Greeks were suffering under the Ottoman Turks, the Muslims, who had taken over Greece, who were killing them, raping them, oppressing them. And they saved all their money in this village to send the boy to the promised land. And it's about his journey from Greece to America and all that happens to him, including he loses all the money they give him on a ship. He gets conned. He gets beaten up. And it's all of the trials and tribulations that come to this great country. And the last scene, I remember to this day because it really is very much the story of my family in so many ways. And the millions of you who listen to the show probably feel the same way. When the boy arrives in America and lands on the docks in New York, he looks up at the buildings and he looks down at the ground and he kisses the earth. And that is America, America. Now, that was a movie that inspired. Could you imagine a movie being made today by the vermin of Hollywood? A movie like that. Can you imagine the filth in Hollywood today making a movie like that? Everything that comes out of their sick minds is another permutational combination of degeneracy or America hating. That's all. By the way, if you suffer gout, I think I'm going to switch now to nutrition. Make believe we're in a cafe, and just I'm a guy who runs a cafe. I'm not really a famous writer and talk show host. And we're sitting in a cafe together and we're chatting. I can shift topics. Let's say we're in a cafe together. And I'm the guy behind the counter and I'm just wiping a glass or giving you a call. So we just talked about Greece and I told you about a book. Then I immediately shift to, do you suffer from gout? And you say, well, what the hell is he talking about now? But you'd listen because it's interesting. Do you suffer from gout? Do you happen to know that there are foods that you're going to avoid? My PhD is in human nutrition from the University of California at Berkeley and I've written books on it. So if you do suffer gout, don't listen to the quack who wants to put you on drugs necessarily. The quack with the stethoscope will immediately put you on a drug, which maybe you need, but maybe you can do it by avoiding some of the food you're stuffing down your throat. Did you know that liver, brain, kidney, anchovies, herring, and mackerel can increase your uric acid level? Are you aware that alcohol and sugary drinks may increase uric acid levels, especially beer, making your toe swell even more? Without Viagra? And do you realize, by the way, that by taking at least a gram of vitamin C, drinking tea with thyme can help decrease uric acid levels in your body? Are you aware that you can buy cherry juice? And I don't mean fruity cherry juice. I mean, you got to go get the holistic, whole, the hippie cherry juice with no sugar will help clear up some of the uric acid. Cherries are wonderful to clean the kidneys. And that's another health tip right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. I think we're going to shift gears now. I never forget about 4 weeks ago, I had a Chinese gentleman call a show an elderly Chinese gentleman. He said, Michael, Dr. Savage, he said, the reason I like your show is because you're like an ancient Chinese philosopher. He said, you talk about so many topics. He said, in one day, you can talk about politics. He said, but then you can talk about nature. You can talk about health. And he said, it's very much like the ancient Chinese. And I was so appreciative of that call because it encourages me to continue in my ADD here on the Savage Nation. In other words, what I consider to be, what you might consider to be from your day, they used to have another name for it. Let's say a man of much knowledge, diverse knowledge. Today they call it ADD. In other words, if you have many interests or a man who can speak with authority and knowledge on so many things, in my day that was considered culturally aware individual. Today it's considered ADD. They put you on a drug to make sure you are a monodimensional individual who can sit in a cubicle and do what like a robot, what the boss tells you to do. That's if they even converse at all anymore. I don't know. Does anyone converse? Is there conversation left in America? I wouldn't know. I don't know. I'm glad I grew up when I did. I'm glad that I had to take the 100. I mean, I'm glad that we had to read the 100 great books at Queens College. It was based on the University of Chicago. And we got a great education. And we didn't know it at the time. It was just considered hard. We had to learn. We had to pass and learn two languages. Then I got two master's degrees. Then I got my PhD from Berkeley many years later when I was a mature adult with children. But the point is that I've had a very fine education because I made myself have it. I forced myself. I'm not a natural student. In fact, I detest school. It's a strange phenomenon. I actually hate school. I hated sitting in classrooms. And I don't like academia to begin with. But here, look, with all these higher degrees, go figure that one out. How does that work? Because I knew that I needed those degrees in order to qualify in life. I knew that in the future, unless you had higher degrees, virtually people wouldn't take you seriously. Unless you were Sean Hannity, went to high school. That's, or Glenn Beck, let's say, went to grade school. That, but they're the exception, not the rule. In their case, you don't need a higher degree. They use it as an advantage. Because if you have enough blackboards and glasses, I guess you could, it's like Pol Pot in reverse. And there's a certain element of the Pol Pot situation there, where instead of glorifying, you know what I'm saying? It's hard to follow that one. You got to be on a stage. I'd have to take a sip of vodka on the stage in order to follow that one to its unavoidable conclusion. Are there any lifestyle questions out there? I could be Dr. Savage Lifestyle Advisor. They're really taking over the field from therapists, you know. A friend told me this about a year ago. She said, you know, the therapists have to put in so many years to go to school and get credentialed, and there's so many of them that people are just going into the life coach field, but no one knows who they've been. Who are you asking to tell you what to do with your life? Why would you listen to anybody? Me, you'd listen to. I've been in radio 16 years. If you like what I have to say, you might trust me to give you some advice that's good. I mean, I'm married with children. I have a PhD. I'm a successful author and broadcaster. You say, all right, the guy knows what he's talking about. Let me see what he has to say. But you get it for nothing on the show. If I went into, let's say I decide, what am I going to do, open a restaurant? I've been thinking about that. Can I share this with you? I'm a little bored lately because I've done the charity thing and I get nothing back for it. I'm not like the Sandlers who give money to have a movie made about myself and give me a medal. And I don't really want to fund left-wing groups or right-wing groups. Again, you know, let someone else do it. So I don't want to do the charity thing. We help dogs. We give dogs to veterans. We give money to people who raise dogs to combat veterans who are injured. We do some other stuff I don't want to talk about. But there's no dynamic in it. There's no day-to-day with people, right? So I'm saying, well, what am I going to do? What if I'm lucky enough to live a certain number of more years? I always thought that I'd be dead by now. I mean, I don't know how to put this. This is such a hard thing to say. I never thought it'd come out of me. But I never thought I'd live this long. Because I come from a short-lived father and a grandfather. So I always had like this tick-tock over my head, like heart disease, the heart attack, blah. But then I spent years like looking for the reason. It's not like I think I found it, but I did change my lifestyle. Like I didn't smoke two packs of Philip Morris every day unfiltered. I didn't eat flunk, and I didn't eat, like, you know, fat meat and potatoes, although I'm eating more fat meat and potatoes now. because the seafood that I was living on for years is all contaminated, by and large. It's a hard thing to admit. I've been taking mega vitamins for 35 years. I mean, I've written many books on it. Many of you know my books going back to the 70s, right? So I'm here now. God knows I'll be here tomorrow, right? But let's say I live another, my mother lived to 88, father to 55. I don't know. Let's say I live to 10 more years. Functional, good functional years. I'm coming up with a number. I don't know how long it'll be. Good. 10 more minutes for all I know. But let's say 10 years. I can't just do radio. So I'm saying to myself, what am I going to do with myself, let's say, during the day when I'm preparing the show? And I don't need 10 hours a day to prepare anymore. I write best-selling books, but I still have too much energy. People say, where do you get it from? How do you do it at your age? What? My age? I've been this way since I'm 5 years old. And I realized, I told you where I get the magic power from. I told you it's from my deceased brother, Jerome, who never, my silent brother, Jerome. He never talked. He never walked. He was allegedly blind. I told you he was sent away, you know, at a home at five. It killed me. It ripped a piece of my guts out. And he died after 20 years in a home in a horrible, oh, God, in like a public, I think, Wiltwyck on Staten Island. Don't ask. My mother, poor mother, she's in heaven. What she had to go through every week to go visit him. She'd come back drained and couldn't talk for 2 days. So the influence of my silent brother on me, I think, is what motivates me to a great extent. Because I dreamed of him last week. I was going through a very bad, like, down, like, night or day. Do you ever have one of those? I have them all the time, up and down, up and down. It's the way I am. It's human beings are like that. The doctors would have you believe you're sick and need a medication in order to drug the human condition. No, thank you very much. I'd rather struggle with life rather than let you turn me into another a Democrat, you know, who gets up there with the Sieg Heil crowd and thinks if only there was a Obamacare for everybody, the world would be perfect. And I dreamed of my brother out of nowhere. He came to me and talked to me from the next world. Well, that unto itself is suspect, is it not? Anyway, what I'm getting at is, so what do I do with the rest of my life with the spare time? I'm not going to open a restaurant. I have friends in the restaurant business. It's a grueling, horrendous, difficult life. You ask anyone who owns even a successful restaurant. I'm not talking about a greasy spoon. I mean really good places. And I see how hard it is. First of all, everyone will rob you blind if you blink an eye. That's A. Unless you're in there 20 hours a day, the minute I don't care if it's credit card, I don't care what, they're going to walk out with a bottle of wine, a bottle of scotch, or money. That's all. That's number one. So you got to be there. And then you have to be there. Watch the food. You got to make. You realize a restaurant is only one meal away from a disaster. I thought about that. We in talk radio live on a tightrope. We're only one sentence or one word away from a total meltdown. But in a restaurant, you're only one meal away from it, too. You can serve a contaminated... What if you serve a contaminated Portuguese cucumber? Bing, you're out of business. Right? The next thing you know, all of the lawyer, all the relatives of Soros who weren't as smart, who became lawyers or dentists, they're in the restaurant. The dentist eats, gets sick, and then he goes to his brother, who's the lawyer, and sues you. You're out of... So, terrible business. So, rule that out. Bar? No, I don't want to be a bartender. And a cafe? What, are you kidding me? I don't know why people go in these businesses, so that's not for me. So I'm thinking, what am I going to do? Cars? I love cars. I love boats. But I don't want to sell them necessarily. I couldn't. What if I sold private jets for fun? I know a lot about them. I love them. I mean, even on the ground, I like private jets. I could probably be a good private jet salesman. But I don't know if I can go from talk radio into private yacht sales and jet sales. That might be fun. But I don't travel. That's the problem. I'd have to sell them out of my living room. So the only way, because I don't like to go anywhere. I like to basically do my radio show for my houses, too. So, in other words, if I wanted to sell the new G, I think it's the G550. I don't even know the latest one. I think they're coming up with the G600 now. I don't even know. It's competing with this one, that one, or that, or Global Express. I'd have to sell it by the model in my living room. But I'll bet you I could sell them in model and then send you down to the airport to look at the real one. Same with ships. I could sell ships. I've always been interested in not in yachts, but in ships. I have a nice-sized 40-ton yacht that I drive myself with a bow and stern thruster. I've learned that. I can run this boat myself. Captain Mike and the dog, that's all we need. There's just something about the bay with the boat with no one on it. I mean, if I talk for a living, right, I don't really want anyone on the boat. Then I have to listen to them. I go insane listening to anybody on a boat. What am I on a boat for, listening to someone? You can go crazy when they're coming in your right ear and you're trying to dodge people on parasails and kayakers and schmucks cutting off boats. You got to focus on the water. So I can't listen. Yak. People think they're going on a boat. They get verbal diarrhea. All they want to do, yak. What are they going on a boat for? They could stay home on a telephone. You know, on a, like a party line, like, hello, Mrs. Goldberg. So I go out alone with the dog. You know why? Because I like to look at the baby seals every year they come up. I know the coves they come up in. I probably know the bay as well as anyone in the whole world, by the way. I don't think there's a cove in the San Francisco Bay I haven't been in. I'd say from the Bay Bridge forward all the way. I know the Bay Area very well. I've been boating in it for so long. There's people who must know it better than I. I'll admit that. But I know it very well. You know that my new novel's coming out in September from St. Martin's called Abuse of Power. It's a novel, and it's a thriller. It's an amazing book because a lot of it is set in San Francisco Bay. The guy is a journalist who loses his national career because he's smeared by a group that is somewhat like a group you might know of. They smear him by taking his words out of context, and he winds up working for a local station only. But a lot of the book is set on San Francisco Bay and some islands that you may not have heard of. You're not going to believe this movie when it comes out. I know this movie's going to be turned. And book's going to be a movie. I'm so excited by it. So she said, Mike, why don't you stick to what you do? Do talk radio because it's all you're good at and you're great at it. Or keep writing those books, Mike. Don't diminish yourself by, you know, doing anything. So what I'm getting at is one of the things I thought of doing is becoming a life coach. Then I said, oh, that's interesting. But then here's the problem. See, everything has a problem attached to it. I reached a point in life where everything has a negative to it. Nothing on earth is clean. Let's say I do the life coach thing, okay? So you want to do it in person because in the radio, you don't meet any people, right? You're on the radio. You're in a studio, so you want people contact, right? People. It's like, let's say a big entertainer wants to do a live performance in a small club. That's well known because they need the contact with the people. Like Al Pacino would go from doing a movie to doing a live theater show in the Village. Why? He needs the crowd. He needs not the smell of the grease paint, but the smell of the enter with the perfume, I guess. I don't know. Whatever it is. Whatever floats is his macaroni, okay? So I want the people contact, right? So I do the life coach things and what. Now I'm going to have them come to an office and fetch to me about what's wrong and I should tell them what to do. Okay, how do I protect myself from a yenta setting me up saying I did something inappropriate? I don't want anyone around me. All right, so you say, well, okay, Mike, you're so good at it. People would like your advice. Do it on the telephone. Then I'm back where I am. I'm on the radio again. I don't want to do it disconnected from people. I don't know how anybody in the healing professions today has a practice without fear of some moron saying that he did something to her. I guess you have to have a nurse in the room with you, right? But you can't do that if you're doing coaching. How does a psychiatrist do it? How does a psychiatrist sit in the room with a woman today without fearing she's going to go out and say to somebody, oh, in the middle of it, he touched me? I don't understand this, the world we live in. Look at the calls I'm getting telling you what to do. I should grow celery seed extract? That's what I should do with a living? All right, tell you what, you'll be my life coach. How's that? Tell Michael Savage what he should do with the rest of his life in addition to 1-800-449-8255. It has to be on a classy level. Don't make recommendations like to give me a job where I need a, you know, like I talked about, okay? Don't recommend I do something that I need a name tag, a hairnet, or a funny hat, in essence, or something on that level. I'm not looking for that kind of level of living or income. I'm not doing it for the money either. Remember that. I mean, of course I'll charge for whatever I do, but I'm not doing it for that reason. In the sense that I'm not a big spender. I don't wear jewelry. I don't need anything anymore. I don't want anything. So I'm not doing it for that. I'm doing it for the involvement with people and doing something of use to people and getting the feedback of being of use to people. You follow what I'm saying? Sacramento, Jeremy, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, Dr. Savage, I was wondering, a few months ago you had mentioned that you looked on eBay and you seen that your health book was going for like $200, and you said you were going to republish it and so no one could make money off you, and I was just wondering when you were going to...
I actually did republish Healing Children Naturally. It's on my website for $20 or so. People were selling used copies for up to $200. Of that book. Now, you could buy it in a reprint edition of my own book there. People love that book. They keep buying it. It's an eternal classic. But I've written other books over the years that I'm thinking of redoing, and I don't even want to go through them. I wrote books in the 70s that were 20 years ahead of their time. You know that I wrote books reducing the risk of Alzheimer's that should have won Nobel Prizes? I wrote books in the 70s on with some anti-aging concepts in them that are currently fashionable in the medical profession today, but you wouldn't think that anybody would notice, would you? I notice. All that matters is that I know. Jay and Reno, go ahead. You're up on the Savage Nation.
Savage, you need to start a company being a political consultant.
I've thought about that as well, because I'm probably as good, I would be as good at it as anybody. But I'm going to tell you something else. I've tried to advise people, because I know more about the heartbeat of America than any consultant in this country. I don't care what data they use. My microphone and my ears are the best data you could ever buy. And I know better what politicians should say, not say, and how to appeal to the people. They wouldn't listen to me. They'd go and buy some hack who worked for the opposition a week before. Many of them are kind of idiotic. I got to tell you, Jay, many of the people in politics are rather stupid. I must tell you, they're not that clever. But all right, I've thought of politics. I won't go into politics. I'll never run for office. I want to make it very clear. It's not a business for me. Look at this one. Paul in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, do you play a musical instrument? Have you ever tried?
I'm terrible. I have no musical sense. I've tried. I'm no good at it.
You're so lyrical.
I would love to have learned how to play the alto sax. I can't do it. I tried when I was younger. I admire people who can play an instrument. I can't do it. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Listen, we'll continue this discussion tomorrow. I'm going to move on to other topics. Think about it overnight, about what I should do with my spare time. We'll pick it up tomorrow. Think about it overnight. What should Savage do tomorrow? In addition to radio, in addition to, I actually thought about getting a second PhD. I have two master's degrees, a PhD. I actually thought about getting another PhD. It's a strange thing. Well, I go for a master's because it's too long. The PhD, I'd get a master's probably in neurology or in neurosurgery. Well, I couldn't do neurosurgery at master's level, but I could do it in something neuroanatomy, although neuroanatomy and neurophysiology would probably be closer to what I'm interested in. I'm fascinated by neurophysiology, and I haven't kept up with the field at all, even as an amateur looking in. So that's. But going back to school is very hard, to go sit in a classroom. I can't learn anymore that way. So, by the way, tomorrow, a new website, michaelsavage.com, has a new face. It almost got posted today. You're going to love it. Don't get scared. It's still going to have pictures because I love the pictures, but it's going to be all new and better. And we got working out some glitches. But right now on michaelsavage.com, you know, it's a very successful business unto itself. I have 4.1 million uniques a month. Hopes fade for peaceful Arab transition to democracy, meaning the lie of the Arab Spring. It's really an Arab Spring into despotism. Are you shocked by that? What is Obama sending money to the Muslim Brotherhood? The Arab Spring into Hitlerism. It's amazing to me how idiotic the people are around this country. Arab Spring. Oh, yeah, suddenly going to change overnight. Thousands of years of hatred and insanity. Overnight, suddenly, because they wear dungarees and have a BlackBerry, they're going to start loving you. Britain bans Savage welcomes Castro-eyed butcher, says Umberto Fontanova, who's from Cuba and understands the story. It's all on my website. If you're interested in what Wiener's wife looks like, she's a gorgeous woman. Wiener's unflappable wife finally gets flapped. Wiener said his beautiful spouse, a longtime aide to Hillary Clinton, doesn't understand what all the fuss is about. We have a wedding photo that we found from the New York Post. How this works, I'll never understand. A devout Muslim wife and a guy who takes pictures of his crotch. I don't understand this. I don't get it. I just don't understand how that works.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Yeah! right. Well, aside from the fact that a superbug is spreading in Europe on vegetables, Wienergate is continuing here in the United States. Spreading like the superbug in Europe? Not really. Why? Now, why would Wienergate, where a left-wing fanatic from New York City, Representative Andrew Wiener, was caught, let us say, red-handed, sending a picture of himself in extremis in a pair of underwear. He says he doesn't deny that it may or may not be him, but he didn't send it, which means it is him. So you say, well, is it his private business because it's the private parts? Well, actually, the question is, would you vote for a man who does a thing like this? What does it tell you about him? The answer is, to the Marxist leftists in New York City, it's actually normal behavior. So the debauchery exhibited by Rep. Wiener is nothing abnormal. He actually could get a bump in the polls, sorry, for a thing like this. If you take a look at the white trash that's glorified on reality TV, why would white trash in office be any different if you're a Democrat who believes in this drug, sex, rock and roll, Medicaid, and the environment? The fact of the matter is, there is obviously a double standard. Of course Republicans are held to a different standard because they allegedly stand for family values. So if a man who's a Republican is caught with his pants down and his underwear shown, sending it to a listener, a girl, whatever, he would be drummed out of the business. But since this is the norm for liberal Democrats, nothing will happen. So that's the end of that. That's why I say it's better to talk about the superbug rather than the super wiener in New York City. And what else is in the news? Everything and nothing. Romney entered the field. Frankly, he gave a great speech. We're going to have it for you on the Savage Nation today. He sounded very Reagan-esque, and he attacked Obama, which he should have. Attacked him right off the bat. And that's good. He said that, oh, he's failed the USA. Unfortunately, we see the jerk Huckabee saying he could change his mind and re-enter the race, which is amazing. Why a jerk like that would even be taken seriously. Huckabee. It might be his wiener, too. I mean, we don't know. 1-800-449-8255. Newspaper says we're on the verge of a Great, Great Depression. No kidding. Covered that yesterday. No one seems to be interested. And, of course, the stories on MichaelSavage.com that I picked are pictorially interesting. Russian mob eclipses Italian mafia in South Florida. Take a look at their pictures. Rare Marilyn Monroe photos released in honor of what would have been the screen legend's 85th birthday. Take a look at some of Marilyn Monroe's most beautiful moments captured on film. It's actually very interesting. She looks happiest with the playwright Arthur Miller. 1-800-449-8255. ACLU wants porn for prison inmates on MichaelSavage.com. It's Obama's worst nightmare. A slow economy slows some more. Really, while he was in Europe slurping beer? Rep. Alan West says, I cannot understand U.S. role in Libya. What else is on my website? Let's go to the bottom where the good stuff is. Some of it's so horrible I can't read it to you. Family asks for public's help after 7-year-old mauled by pit bull. If the picture of the child's face is sickening, send her some money. See the Savage's service dogs. We sponsor these foster standard poodles to be service dogs for American disabled combat vets of the Afghan and Iraq conflicts. Not one invitation for Memorial Day from any veterans group. So don't feel left out yourself. We don't do it to be invited. Although it would have been nice, we do it to help the vets. Muslim girl 19 stoned to death after taking part in a beauty contest. The religion of peace told him to do it. Suicidal Britain continues absurd ban on Michael Savage. Again, in a story from the religion of peace, the top Iran cleric to President Hitler in Iran says killing Israeli children okay, and suicide bombings are a Muslim duty. Bring more of them in. Bring more of them in. What else is on the website? Egyptian general defends virginity checks on protesters. Well, we'll let that one go. No point in a wisecrack on that. 1-800-449-8255. All this and more right here on the Savage Nation. It is the Savage Nation. Take a virtual tour down the world of therapy. I've dimmed the lights, put up the jazz music, hung out my shingle, and now I'm playing Life Coach. Cost you nothing. Thousands of dollars of information. I'm just trying this out. I'm trying this hat on. I actually enjoy it. I find it to be a lot of fun. And I'll tell you, in addition to being helpful, I find that I can launch into a political discussion right off talking with one of my callers about their life problem, if it works, you know, if it fits. So let's go to the callers now. New York City, WOR, June. You are on the Savage Nation. June, what's on your mind?
Last year, my mother passed away, and she left me some money, and my sister stole $40,000 from a bank account that she didn't think I knew about.
Mm.
She also stole the ring that was promised to my daughter for 30 years.
Mm.
And she took all the family pictures.
Oh, boy.
And I feel like I need therapy from, it's such a betrayal.
But now, how well did you get along with this sister prior to this discovery of her theft?
That's why it's such a betrayal.
What, you're saying you were very close with her?
Yes, yes.
But when your mother died, the true, let's say the greedy side of her emerged, is that it?
The what? The greedy side of my sister?
Yes.
Yes, definitely.
Now, was she a poor woman? Was she in desperate straits?
My sister? She does have financial problems, but no, not
who,
in
who was more better off, you or her, financially? Okay. At the time of your mother's death, who was better off, you or your sister?
Equal.
So you're both struggling, in other words, and it should have been split.
Exactly, and that's the way my mother wanted it.
But what did your mother's will say?
My mother said she made a will, and then my sister swore up and down that there wasn't any.
Well, where is the will? Do you have a copy of your mother's will or no?
My sister said she went with my mother at one time to make out a will, and then when I confronted her with the will, she swore up and down that I'm crazy. There wasn't any will.
Oh. Well, it's a tough problem without a will. If you have a crook for a sister, the only recourse you would have would be a legal action against her, but that's going to cost you money, and there's no guarantee of a recovery in that regard. What are you going to go on? On what basis are you going to prove that your mother wanted you to have half the money or that she wanted you to have her ring? What proof do you have to that, to those statements?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any proof? Are there any third parties who would testify that those were your mother's wishes?
Well, there are my nephews, but they're siding with my sister.
Oh, there you go. And what are they? Her, the nephews are, of course, your sister's sons?
Yes.
All right. So you're ready. You have the family lined up around the money. You know, you're not, the only thing I can tell you is you're not alone. I know other families over a few pieces of silverware that they're breaking up over silverware. Can you believe it?
No, because I can't even believe this.
Well, I think the big thing here is your heartbreak rather than the loss of money. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Okay, the loss of a sister is bigger to you than the loss of the money, right?
Oh, yeah, and my
nephew. All right, so what I would say to you is work on that part of the quotient rather than the money per se. Because you may never see the money, but you may be able to understand that your sister never was who you thought she was, or the worst of her came out when your mother died. And you're going to have to say to yourself, your sister died when your mother died. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
The day would come that Obama the serpent would finally show his true face. It was only a matter of time until it happened. I mean, he stabbed America in the back virtually for two straight years now, and most of you are still in the dark, not even understanding the danger we are in. For those of you who understand what I'm talking about, I'm going to ask you, I'm going to do something that I've never done on this show, but please bear with me for one, I would say 40 to 60 seconds. If you are a Bible loving, Bible-believing, Bible-reading human being, I want you to read along with me a Psalm of David, because it's something that I read in grade school in New York. Believe it or not, we actually had to read a biblical passage in a public school of the United States of America. Now, of course, every kind of diseased filth is put into the minds of the children, and the Bible is now banished the way pornography was once banished. Pornography has now become the playbook of the schools of the United States of America, while the Bible itself has been put not only on a back shelf, but banned completely because of the vermin in the ACLU. I'm going to read a Psalm of David because it joins the Christians and the Jews together. It's something that's unified the people for a long period of time. And many of you will know it even if you've moved away from it. It's very simple. It says, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He guideth me in straight paths for his name's sake. And though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I shall fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou hast anointed my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever." Now, the reason I read that for you is because we are facing a new era in the United States of America. The crypto-Marxist president, Barack Hussein Obama, has finally come out of the closet. There's no going back into the closet. He is who he is. Now let's take some more callers on the Savage Nation. Harrisburg, PA. Kevin, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Savage, for taking my call. I just want to tell you, I just want to give you your props, your intelligence, and your keen punctuality, because what you said 3 days ago, other hosts are just repeating it. It's like they listen to your show and do their shows. That's all I have to say, Dr. Savage. Keep up the good work.
Well, I know that the smart... I know people listen. I know they listen, and I know they compare. It's like any other product out there, and the fact is talk radio is a product I'm providing to you. And if the product didn't taste good, or if it was a few days old, you wouldn't be buying it anymore. I want to give you a snapshot of my life, how boring it really is. I try to get an outboard motor that I have on the back of a runabout running. And an old friend of mine, a Jaguar mechanic, I know for, 30 years, we ran into each other again at an auto show a year ago. So he came over. Now, this is a two-year-old Yamaha 20 horsepower, but because the gas got old, it didn't start a year ago. Then we restarted it. And it wouldn't start again, so I bought a new battery. We put that in. That took us an hour to get the thing running, but she keeps conking out when we reduce it to idle if we don't put it on a fast idle. So I just shut the thing down after letting it run for an hour and put it back up on the ramp because it's not nice enough weather to run it anyway. That was Saturday. Now, Sunday, yesterday, there were small craft advisories on San Francisco Bay. And I know better than to go out in a big powerboat in small craft advisory, but I wanted to get my merit badge in foul weather because, you know, no matter how, let's say, windy it is on a bay, it's still not the open ocean. It's nothing. So I arranged to go out with a guy who bamboozled me into telling me he was once, many years ago, in the Dutch Navy. Could you believe this? Nice enough guy. I knew him through some people. He had gone out with me one time before. He was a bit of a nervous Nelly. So I figured let him crew on the boat. Normally, I only go out with the dog because I don't like to talk with anyone on a boat. Now, I keep my boat like a model ship. The rails are varnished. The stainless steel is gleaming. Everything is perfect on my boats because I like a boat to be perfect. So I go out with this guy, and I give him a lecture on exactly what he's expected to do when I'm docking. Remember, I'm up on the flybridge, and I can't be on the deck at the same time. So I say to him, I'm going to call him John. I say, John, here's what you do. When I back her into the dock, you step off and you tie the stern line on first. I will then use the bow thruster and bring the bow around. And then I'll, you know, throw you a bow line. You'll bring a bow line down from the center, which you've tied. Yes, yes, I understand. I pull up to the dock in a fairly choppy wind, and I see something's going wrong. Nothing is right. I'm yelling, I'm screaming, the guy's not using the two-way radio, I can't get in touch with him. I look down, all of the lines that he tried to attach are in the water, that's number one. Number two, he tied a center line on, that's all we had. So blah, 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 after screaming and yelling, I see we're tied up a little. I finally come off the flybridge to help correct it. And you know what he says to me? I think that I may have caused you some damage. I said, what? What happened? I figured maybe I scuffed the dock or something. You know what this idiot did? He took the line. These are big, thick, heavy lines that you tie up. This is a 40-ton boat that you tie up against the dock. Instead of running a line through a cleat out onto the dock, he wrapped it around the stainless steel rail, which I didn't know, and it broke the stainless steel rail off of my boat. Can you believe this? And then the guy has the nerve to say to me, I'm not sure I actually did it. I went ballistic, screaming, are you at blah, blah, blah. So then I calmed down. We removed the rail. It took a good hour to get the rail off. I had broke off half the screws unscrewing them. I got a 10-foot section, and I'm going to show you how beautiful this country really is when you get down to the working-class man. I want to show you what goes on with boatsmanship. I mean, most guys have captains who do all of this. I like to have my hands into all of it. It gives me a sense of reality. I just happened 2 weeks ago to have bought a new cordless DeWalt screwdriver because there's a bit of an eddy in me. I grew up fixing things in my dad's shop, and I like to use tools on a minute, you know, a mile basis. I bought the most, the sweetest tool set I've ever seen with new bits. I had no idea why I was buying it. Well, it was for yesterday. So now there's about 12, 14 screws that have to come out, right? In addition to the stanchion that broke, there were four others that were screwed in. So in unscrewing the stainless steel screws, about 6, 7 of them, the heads broke off and the screws got stuck in the wood, if you know what I'm talking about. Then the last two screws, I couldn't get the screwdriver into it. I had to pull them out by wrench. I had to yank them out by wrench. Luckily, I'm a little handy. So I got the rail off. Now, that's step one. Now I call 5 different people. Do you know anyone who can fix stainless steel without ruining it? Because it's only a 15-degree bend. Everyone says, yeah, you got to go to Werner's Welding in Sausalito, one of the old-timers on the dock. His dad was a welder. Well, guess what? I brought the iron down in my car to my good friends at List Marine. They're the greatest mechanics around. And they held the rail for me because Werner wasn't in. And then he called me later. He says, is this the Michael Savage? I said, yes. I never met him. He says, I've loved your show from the beginning. I've listened to you back since the early days. He said, you know what? I'm leaving on vacation tomorrow. I go away every year this time. He said, but I'll fix your stainless steel the best I can today. I'll get it done today.
Savage.
Gene Healy is with the Cato organization. He's the executive vice president of Cato.org, and he's a columnist with the Washington Examiner. He's written extensively on Obama's Libyan war. Notice I say Obama's Libyan war, and how the president is in clear violation of the 1973 War Powers Act. Gene, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Great to be here, Michael. Thanks.
Well, why is Congress doing nothing about the war in Libya?
Well, from the beginning, Congress has been out of the loop on this. You know, the George W. Bush, a lot of people on the left were upset when he called himself the decider, but Barack Obama has shown that he likes to be to have the scepter and the crown and the imperial power himself. He, other than a perfunctory notification of Congress, he finally got around to explaining what we were doing in Libya about 10 days after the Tomahawk missile started to fly. And when he gave a televised address to the American people on the subject, he mentioned Congress only once in passing, and he never mentioned the Constitution. But as Madison said, there's no part of the Constitution where there's more wisdom to be found than the part that gives the legislature and not the executive the power to decide when we go to war. If we're going to have, if we're actually going to launch military force and commit American troops into battle, this is something the Constitution, at a minimum, requires the people's representatives to vote on.
I don't think Libya was a clear and present danger to the U.S., do you?
Not only was Libya not a clear and present danger to the United States, in fact, President Obama's defense secretary, Robert Gates, was on Meet the Press a week or so after the bombing started, and he admitted that Libya wasn't even an important national interest of the United States. Now, Hillary Clinton disagreed with him on that, but I think it says something when you have the Secretary of Defense telling you that Libya is not an area of key national interest for the United States. It makes you wondering. It makes you start wondering why we're bombing Libya and why we didn't have some sort of deliberation before we got into what seems like yet another interminable, uncertain war in the Middle East.
Well, I mean, the American people should be responsible for not reminding their representatives about Congress's responsibility to enforce the War Powers Act, right?
I think that's right. Yeah, actually, what you see so often in these areas where our Constitution's been eroded, at bottom, it's because we, the people, are willing to put up with it. You know, unless and until some congressmen actually start losing their seats because people are angry that they're not doing anything about the ways in which the imperial presidency has grown and the powers that Barack Obama is seizing, you know, unless and until they start paying an electoral price for it, it looks like we'll keep on going as we've been going before.
It seems the United States is in a state of permanent war, not headed for one.
At least September 11th, 2001. Now, clearly Libya doesn't have anything to do with Al-Qaeda and the attacks of September 11th. But, yeah, we have been in a state of permanent emergency for going on a decade now. And, you know, there's a reason that presidents like to fight wars, that presidents like, whether they're real wars or metaphorical wars, like the war on drugs and the war on poverty. The idea that the president is a wartime leader and the idea that we're in an atmosphere of emergency is an argument for the president to seize more power and cut Congress out of the loop. And that's exactly what we're seeing in this administration. It's exactly what we've seen in the past as the president as the presidency has grown from what was supposed to be a limited constitutional office to this constitutional abomination, this person that is combines the roles of supreme warlord of the earth and national talk show host with nuclear weapons. It's a scary prospect, and we won't start reining the presidency in until the American people wake up and start demanding it.
How has the executive power been permitted to grab so much power over the last few years where we're in a little dictatorship?
A lot of people think that the reason the executive has grabbed so much power is mainly because of power-hungry presidents. Well, you know, we've had plenty of power-hungry presidents, so that's true, but in fact, a lot of it has to do with congressional abdication. Congress lets presidents get away with this sort of thing. And in fact, in many cases, they punt hard decisions to the president just because they'd rather, be raising money for reelection and passing out pork. Who likes the hard choices? Making the law, deciding on war and peace. So I place a lot of blame on Congress and a lot of blame on the American people. But, you know, Congress still has formally all the constitutional powers it needs to put the presidency back in its proper constitutional place. Congress literally has the power to put the White House up for auction if it wants. I'm not saying they should, although some days you feel like maybe it wouldn't be the worst idea, but if they have that much constitutional power, which they do, then they can defund wars, and they can get rid of czars, and they can put the presidency back in the place it was supposed to be, in the place that the framers intended.
Well, do you think we're going to see a check on executive power coming soon?
It seems that the lesson of history is that it's got to get worse before it gets better. So you saw at the end of the Nixon administration, the second Nixon administration, you saw some new restrictions put on presidential power. I mean, that's when you got the War Powers Act in 73 passed over Nixon's veto. So the record is that Congress doesn't get motivated to assert itself constitutionally until the American people make it clear that they've had it with this imperial behavior by presidents. And so it may be a case where things are going to, if things get worse, then we will see a resurgence of Congress and a resurgence of constitutional law.
Is NATO even winning or accomplishing anything in Libya? Other than supporting, I don't know what they're doing.
It's difficult to tell. I mean, you've got it's a bit of a farce, really. I mean, NATO is an organization that existed to stop the Soviet tanks from rolling into Western Europe, and the Soviet Union collapsed of its own weight nearly 20 years ago. So you have to you have to wonder what NATO is doing. Who thought it was going to be an organization that carries out wars in North Africa? It's very difficult to tell what, if anything, they're accomplishing. They have a UN Security Council resolution that is supposed to limit them to, protecting civilians. It's very clear that they've taken that and made it into a war for regime change. The problem is that our European allies have been free riding off of America's defense budget for so long that the French and the British the other coalition partners don't even really have the material or the capability of running a proper air war against even a third rate military power like Libya. What it looks like you've got is a stalemate, possibly something that's going to turn Libya into Somalia. I think people are going to wonder at the end of the day, what did we accomplish by all that? And that's the kind of thing that people, that's one of the reasons we have a requirement in the Constitution that Congress authorize wars, because you would like to see some of these issues, being debated before you decide to launch a war.
Gene Healy, thanks for being with us on the Savage Nation.
Thanks, Michael. It's great to be here. Check out my three-part series on the Imperial Presidency, Obama's Imperial Presidency, at the Washington Examiner, www.washingtonexaminer.com. And look at cato.org, cato.org. Thanks again.
I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
The White House to the Junkhouse in one administration. How the Obamas have degraded the presidency in the White House. Let me begin by saying that last night I watched a TV movie after a hard day on the radio, and exactly one vodka cocktail. Frankly, I was spent. I searched around and I fell into a movie about a woman with two teenage children who was divorced and meets an apparently nice guy in a hardware store and begins a relationship with him. Now, her son is 16 years old. He returns from military school. He's living in the house. He starts to suspect that the man may be bad. Then he suspects he may be a serial killer based upon certain things that happen in the plot. The woman, though, is in total denial throughout the entire story. No matter what the son discovers, she keeps denying that this, quote, nice guy she met is a serial killer, that there's nothing wrong with him, that the guy makes her happy, and she wishes her son would stop with his paranoia and his suspicions. But as the plot unfolds, and as we see what this new man does, he actually is shown to be a serial killer. He kills an elderly neighbor who has seen a picture of him on America's Most Wanted. He then kills one of the women's friends who asked for his ID and he won't give it to her after a small job in her real estate firm. Eventually, the guy's mania shows and he tries to kill the whole family. Now, the point I'm making is this. Obama is like the smiling, nice guy that women meet in the hardware store. They took him into their confidence, while behind the scenes, he continues to rape and destroy everything that is valuable and decent and good about America. He is literally destroying the house. And while the women of America who actually elected him were gulled a first time by his good looks and his smooth voice, you would think the women of America would not be gulled a second time. You would think that after Obamacare, the Stimulus Act, the takeover of General Motors, the pandering to the radical Islamists, all of the other incredible disasters that this man has brought upon this nation, from the destruction of the currency, the wreckage of the economy, the joblessness, $5 a gallon gasoline, you would think the women of America would finally see the true face of this president and who he really is. But I'm afraid that just like the woman in the movie, the women of America are just as gullible, and Mr. Obama will continue to destroy until he makes one fatal mistake. The U.S. knew as early as 2008 that groups opposed to the Mubarak regime were already developing a plan to overthrow the Egyptian government. Now, I want to pause there. Remember how the media played it? That it was spontaneous, that it was young people with dungarees and blackberries who simply got together on a rave in the street? Nonsense. This was plotted and planned. And I can prove it. And I wrote a 16-page article on it. These are activists who were trained in the United States of America. They were trained by radicals in the United States of America. And so, therefore, this was not spontaneous the way the vermin in the media would have painted the portrait. But the fact of the matter is, if you look at it, when you try to establish a democracy in the Middle East, Islamist radicals move in and take over, I wrote. It's exactly what happened in Gaza. In the elections of 2005, the terrorist group Hamas was the big winner over Mahmoud Abbas's Fatah party. By 2007, Hamas had driven the Fatah party out of Gaza. And when Abbas, still the nominal president of Gaza, called for elections in January of 2009, Hamas said that anyone who participated in the election would be dealt with by the Hamas ministry or by other means. In other words, if you vote, you die. So that's what the term free elections means in the Middle East. It means that a radical terrorist organization will move in, intimidate the population, and make sure that its candidates are elected. It's exactly what is likely to happen in Egypt, I wrote 4 months ago, even if a, quote, orderly transition to free elections takes place. And I go on, and I don't want to repeat it again. But who is behind this is the question. I can't spell it all out for you again, but I want you to understand that this did not happen on its own. There are fingerprints of Soros. There are fingerprints of Brzezinski. There are fingerprints of Jimmy Carter's group, in other words, all over this. And I will go back only to that point so that you understand that I'm not making this up out of whole cloth. We go to al-Baradei, who showed up in Cairo only 2 days after the uprising began and was immediately named a negotiator by the Muslim Brotherhood. I wrote, in fact, al-Baradei had been waiting in the wings for quite a while. You see, al-Baradei, I wrote, is on the board of an organization headed by George Soros and Zbigniew Brzezinski called International Crisis Group. Brzezinski is the same man who supervised the fall of the Shah of Iran in 1979. Another board member of the ICC is Javier Solana. Solana is one of the most powerful figures in the European Union. And because of his Marxist sympathies and his support for the regime of Cuba's Fidel Castro, Solana was once on the USA's subversive list. Former USA National Security Advisor Sandy Berger, who once smuggled incriminating documents out of the Clinton White House by hiding them in his clothing, is another board member, as is General Wesley Clark, once fired from his NATO command. Mohammed al-Baradei also sits on the ICC's board. So, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to understand this is a conspiracy of the New World Order. It is it's true Obama is the man giving the speech, but Soros is exerting influence on all of the policies and pronouncements of Barack Obama and his administration. And his influence includes promoting the Muslim Brotherhood to a position of power in Egypt. I will go on at another time. I don't like reading articles on the show because I know that talk radio is supposed to be a spontaneous medium, and I'm very good at spontaneity. However, when it comes to a situation as serious as this, with such implications as what happened, I ask you to read the entire article. It's 16 pages long. I'm posting it back up on michaelsavage.com. It's entitled Obama and the Shadow Socialist Group Behind Egypt's Fall. And it was written, several months ago, before Mubarak was actually thrown out. But you have to understand these things didn't happen on their own volition, like the vermin in the media would have you believe. All right, let's move on. What we're going to play for you is a rap song I did a couple of years ago called 30 Words of English, which is done in jest. Don't assume this is my idea of great literature, but let's hear 30 words of English. 50 words of English. I speak 50 words of English. I speak 50 words of English. I speak 50 words of English. And I got 10 mil in the bank. I speak 50 words of English. And I got 10 mil in the bank, Jank. You speak 100,000 words of English. And you ain't worth jack. Because you ain't got no crack. I speak 50 words of English. And I'm worth 10 mil in the bank, Jank. You speak 100,000 words of English. And you ain't worth jack, crack. Not bad. We have another one. Don't we have one other one somewhere in the archive? Let's hear Ten Toho. One. Oh, this is better. Ten toe hoe. If she's got 10 toes, she's a hoe, Joe. And I gonna mow her low. Yeah. 10 toes. Hoes. Mows low. Stripper clothes. Cause I knows with the blows of the ghettos. If she's got 10 toes, she's a hoe, Joe. And I gonna mow her low. Yeah, 10 Joes and 10 toes. They're hoes. And I mows them lows. I strip her clothes. Cause I knows from the blows of the ghettos. Well, I suspect that if Mitt Romney becomes president, he will be inviting me to the White House to read Ten Toe Ho. I'm pretty sure that would meet up to Mitt Romney's standards of Anglo-Saxon prudence. Oh, goodness. You know, it is funny. I mean, it is good to be alive in interesting times. That's all there is to it.
Savage.